the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, here for you, the Detroit Lions fan, the football fan in America, around the world, worldwide, underground, live and roaring. This is the Pride of Detroit podcast. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Pride of Detroit on Facebook, you know where to find us. I am Chris Lemieux, the adequate host, at adequate host. Joined, as always, by Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, coming to us from beautiful Southern California, where I will soon join him for, I don't know, maybe a little bit of time. I don't know where you're going, you stupid vagabond.
I don't know, but you better get some shorts, because look at this right now. We are 100? In triple That's digits.
Fine. It's probably dry out there versus this humid crap swamp I live in Toledo, but that's fine.
It's true.
Ryan Matthews is here. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm wonderful, Chris. Thank you for asking. Pleasure to be back on the podcast.
I always ask you, were you gone?
It feels like it's been so long since we've recorded. It's just because it's Tuesday, though.
Yeah, we're recording this a day late because we, on Monday, we recorded a conversation with Jeff Schwartz, which you will hear very soon on this podcast. We asked him about Greg Robinson, Jeff's career in the NFL. He actually did a short list cast with us of guards and, was it guards or tackles, Jeremy? I forget.
It was, I think he did both, sort of. I mean, he gave us like a full list of like just guys that he liked, and then he kind of split it between the two.
Well, you'll be hearing that in about like 15, 20 minutes or so. So keep listening. You'll hear that conversation, especially because he penned a really great piece on SB Nation about Greg Robinson, who we should get into right now. Our own takes on Greg Robinson. The big trade that happened for the Detroit Lions. Greg Robinson, guard, no longer a Los Angeles Ram, traded to the Detroit Lions for, what was it? Was it a second round pick in 2018? Or is it like,
sixth round pick.
A six rounder.
Yes.
So the Rams basically gave him away for nothing. And some would argue that's pretty much what he is at this career, but Jeff argues differently. And I don't know. I think a lot of us are kind of seeing the upside that could be a project in Greg Robinson.
Yeah, I want to be the guy that drinks the Kool-Aid on this trade, but I'm just not there yet. There's really nothing positive that could be said about Greg Robinson's time with the Rams. He was one of the most penalized players in the NFL all 3 years. He just gave up pressures. You know, you look at his Pro Football Focus grade, it was awful. Just inconsistencies everywhere. The Rams tried him, you know, on the left side, on the right side, at guard, and just nothing seemed to work. And it was clear they weren't going to give this guy a second contract. They declined his fifth-year option. Nothing worked with the Rams. But this is a former second overall pick, so maybe there's potential there?
I mean, the Lions know quite a bit about failed second-round picks.
Well, this is second overall pick, not second round.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
It's okay. That's why you're the adequate host, man.
I was about to say, I'm already off to a very adequate start here. I mean, I remember him at Auburn, and I remember him just being so good at Auburn, especially with those Gus Malzahn teams. But, I mean, maybe it's something to be said there, the fact that, you know, it was Auburn, which, if you don't know much about Auburn, they do not play a conventional offense at Auburn. That's probably the nicest way to put it. They play something very weird there with Gus Malzahn. And Robinson came out of that, and I don't know, I mean, but granted, at the same time, too, like, can you really trust the Rams when you start talking about somewhere where a guy like Robinson could be very well developed?
Well,
like, I mean, we can always blame the player, but we can also blame, how much is this the player, Ryan, and how much this is the environment he landed in?
I think a lot of it has to do with the spot in which he landed. He landed in a Brian Schottenheimer offense. As a rookie, you know, I think that there was an awful lot of pressure on him to immediately contribute as the second overall pick. I don't think that there's a whole lot of, I think that if in the NFL, if you're a offensive lineman and you're drafted just in the first round, you know, first round alone, there's a lot of expectation for you to immediately slide in and be an impactful player. And the thing with Robinson was, for as talented as he was in, you know, in Auburn's offense, as you mentioned, Chris, he was still a very raw player. Like, everything you saw about him, and looked at a linebacker, a lot of draft profiles and whatnot, and it just spoke a lot about how, like, his technique was really far behind, because he didn't start playing tackle until he came to Auburn. And he came out of Auburn as a redshirt sophomore. He only played 25 games at tackle, and then all of a sudden he was in the NFL. And I think he was starting within 4 or 5 games of his rookie season.
And the system, Chris kind of talked about it a little bit, at Auburn is resembles nothing like a typical NFL offense. And
no, it's like a weird hybrid single wing T or something.
Right. And Danny Kelly of The Ringer had a really, really interesting article out there last week talking about how offensive tackles are kind of becoming harder and harder to scout because college offenses are becoming less and less like NFL offenses. And so, you know, he was bringing up that point. And then the question now becomes is, do the Lions have an offense kind of more in that college scheme? And certainly it's more towards that than the Rams are, right? The Rams are kind of like a run first, typical pocket quarterback type thing. Lions are a little more spread them out, quick throws, you know, draw plays, shotgun, a lot of shotgun, that sort of stuff. But it's still not anything like it was in Auburn. So Greg, I think, still has quite an uphill battle to potentially become an adequate left tackle, in my opinion.
An adequate left tackle?
Yeah.
Adequate.
Chris identifies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question right now is, like, are we expecting anything out of him in 20? He's not going to start in 2017, is he? Or is the left tackle situation bad enough that he would potentially start in place of Taylor Decker over, like, a Joe Dahl or a or whoever else is on the roster?
I think, yeah, absolutely. I think this is their left tackle for the first 7-8 weeks of the season, and that's why I'm very nervous about this. It seems like, I mean, now he's missed OTAs, he's missed minicamp with the Lions, but the Lions have invested now $3.3 million on this guy guaranteed, so if they cut him, they're still paying him $3.3 million, and I don't see anyone else on the roster who can play left tackle better than him. Maybe Cyrus Kwanjo, the other guy that they picked up last week, but he's dealing with a hip injury. He hasn't practiced at all this offseason with any team, so I don't know if he's even going to be ready for training camp. But in my opinion, this is a move very specifically made for left tackle in 2017. Whether he stays with the Lions beyond that, maybe moves inside. You know, Jeff Schwartz talks about that a little bit in the upcoming interview. I don't want to give too much away, but to me, this is a move that's only about 2017, and then the Lions will reevaluate in 2018.
So it's basically, it's part Hail Mary for the left tackle position without Taylor Decker to fix that. And it's part just let's see what he has and then we can move from there. Because, I mean, obviously Robinson is probably flexible enough that if he did play well and then they want to move him around, you know, they could probably, I mean, I think the tackles are pretty much set as long as Rick Wagner is on the books. So, after that, who knows, or maybe they move him over to one of the guards. I mean, they got TJ Lang pretty much set in stone, but then we have a lot of questions at the other guard position. Is it going to be Graham Glasgow? Is it going to be Lakin Tomlinson? Yeah. But, I mean, would Greg Robinson even at this point in his career want to go back to guard, or is he committed to playing tackle?
Well, I think Greg Robinson's tenure with the Lions is pretty dependent upon a couple of things, and that's just the way he comes in. Like, Greg Robinson would not be a member of the Lions if it wasn't for Taylor Decker's injury, and he may not be a part of the Lions' plans depending on how they feel about Travis Swanson and how much money he's going to cost. Because I think if the Lions decide that Travis Swanson is as valuable as he seemingly was last year, because when the Lions lost Swanson, it was a big blow to their offensive line. So if they want to move Glasgow over to center as their permanent fixture as a cheaper option than Swanson, then all of a sudden left guard becomes, you know, open because they're not, I don't think Lakin Tomlinson is in their future plans. And depending on how well Robinson performs, do you guys think that if Robinson has a flash in the pan season this year, that he would necessarily entitle himself to a large contract? Do you think the Lions could get him on a pretty reasonable deal if they wanted to bring him back to play left guard?
I mean, you say flash in the pan, so you're kind of indicating that you're expecting only like one good year out of him.
Well, I mean, just like he hasn't played well at all his entire career. And if he just has one good season here in Detroit, all of a sudden, like, would you be willing to give him the money that he may want? Do you think that he'll demand a lot of money, or do you think that the Lions will be pretty level headed and, you know, realize, you know, we need to see a little bit more? Plus, he would have to move to a new position because left tackle is definitely Taylor Decker's position. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think when it goes to this, I'll let Jeremy in here in a second, but I just want to say this. I think what could probably happen is that could probably work out in the Lions' favor, because what I technically foresee happening, Robinson, if he does play well, if he plays well, but then Taylor Decker comes back, if Taylor Decker is able to come back in the middle of the season, that cuts out a few games where Robinson can keep proving himself, and that could possibly be kind of a very bloodless strategy for the Lions, where they're like, well, you know, you played well, but you didn't really play a full season at the given position, so, you know, we're going to cut you a little less.
That's a good point, but one thing I think also to consider is if he does kind of have this great season, which I'm not holding my breath for, but if it happens, and he does kind of believe himself, he wants to test the market, he thinks he's worth it, it might be beneficial for the Lions to let him go, because then they can pick up a compensatory pick for him. And, you know, if he has this flash in the pan season and suddenly gets a huge contract, the Lions upgraded from a 6th-round pick to maybe a 3rd-round pick or a 4th-round pick, and that would be worth it, in my opinion. That would make, obviously, the whole trade completely worth it. But like Chris said, I think it's hard to see Robinson having a full season period. I think I'm expecting Taylor Decker back after maybe 8 games at most. So in that case, what happens when Decker comes back? Are you considering playing Robinson at guard this year? I doubt it, unless injury happens. But maybe you start practicing him there during the last month or two of the season and reevaluate whether you want to sign him to a new contract or let him hit free agency. But I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, because we need to really consider, I mean, he might not even win the left tackle competition, right? Like, Cyrus Kwanjo, I think, is a guy that we really need to talk about. I think the Joe Dahl experiment is done at left tackle. I think they're going to move him back to guard immediately, starting in training camp. But like I was saying before, this guy is only gets 3 months to adjust to a new offense, to, you know, hone his skills, hone his entire fundamentals, all this sort of stuff. He doesn't have a lot of time, and now he has a month off where he's not even practicing with the team. So I'm very nervous about this move. The Lions didn't have a lot of options, so I'm glad to see them go out and do something about it. I don't think this is necessarily a move that's going to save the Lions' offensive line.
A few
right
things
now.
To that, though. I understand that he's not going to have a whole lot of time to adjust, but Cyrus Kwanjo literally can't do anything while he's still injured. So he needs to get caught up to speed. Corey Robinson isn't really an option at this point either, because he's still injured at this point. The other Robinson, you know, Cornelius Lucas at that point is your left tackle, and clearly the Lions weren't happy with that. You know, because I agree with you. I think Joe Dahl definitely projects better as a guard than he does a tackle. And I think that was kind of just a, hey, let's see what we have here kind of thing. And they decided to, you know, be a little more proactive and go out and get Robinson and Kwanjo. The one thing that makes me really optimistic about Robinson, and trust me, I have my reservations. I mean, if you play 3 years and you play as poorly as Robinson has, there's definitely some red flags and some concerns. But over his 3 playing seasons, he's had 4 different offensive coordinators. You want to talk about a guy who's had to overcome a lot in terms of, I guess, just learning new offenses and whatnot. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, because I wasn't there for the Jeff Schwartz interview, but from what I've seen, what Jeff Schwartz said on Twitter is just that the Lions offense will lend itself better to Robinson because there isn't as much to it from an offensive line perspective. But I definitely want to temper my expectations. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I think it's going to be probably the most interesting camp battle to me personally. I mean, it's cool that we've talked about, oh, you know, who's going to be wide receiver 4, or, you know, who's going to be the nickel cornerback. Those are definitely interesting positions, but they're kind of like depth positions. They're not like super important. I mean, you can make the argument for slot cornerback, but you're talking about the guy who's protecting Matthew Stafford's blindside, you know? So I think this is without a doubt the most interesting and intriguing camp battle there is.
All right, let's take a quick break here. We're going to come back with Jeff Schwartz. And after that, I think we got a little bit of more news to talk about, some other stories from the week. And this is a surprisingly Lions-focused one. I don't think we have a... you'll get a list cast with Jeff Schwartz. Stick around. You'll listen to him next.
What the fuck are the Lakers doing?
What happened? Is something else happening? Oh, you guys are playing around in the Slack.
Mozgov and D'Angelo Russell.
Brooke Lopez. Just like, I guess they're just punting Mozgov's salary. I don't know. What the fuck is this?
Is this... Are these just rumors? Oh, no.
This is a Woj bomb.
Yeah.
Back again on the Pride of Detroit POD cast. Chris Lemieux here, Jeremy Reisman also in the seat, the fearless leader, as always, leading this charge. And we got a special guest with us today, and I'm going to say his name right, because I already admitted to him my many errors, and you can go back about a year on the podcast and figure out what we're talking about. Jeff Schwartz, former Lions offensive lineman, and just all around the league, you know, with the Giants for a couple of years, with the Panthers, Vikings, Chiefs, and now writing at SB Nation. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, my time with the Lions, I almost don't list it at times. I had a good couple months, but it was very short.
Summer vacation in Detroit.
Yeah, it was barely even that, but it was a good time, even though I didn't make the roster.
And yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit later in our interview here. But I just wanted to ask you right away. I know you're a proud parent of two. How was your Father's Day yesterday?
It was good. I played basketball in the morning. I actually worked yesterday for Sirius. You know, I'm the guy on Sirius who's like the fill-in right now for all holidays. Like, I'm like, I work Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July. I'll probably work Christmas. I'm the guy who fills in. So it's a fun time, and I really enjoyed it yesterday. So, I think every day, just we'll get sappy for a second, but like every day being with your kids, it's the best thing ever. So, Father's Day is just another day for me.
Yeah.
By kids, we're not talking about cats, right?
No. Only kids. Okay. I mean, a cat, I used to have a cat, and I loved my cat. I think you can only love your cat. You can't like anyone else's cats, because cats are just D-bags.
Yes, true.
But it's like your D-bag, so you love them.
Also true. This is incredibly insightful, and I do not need to see a therapist anymore. Okay. Let's talk about some football, though, because, Jeff, you recently penned something. I mentioned SB Nation. So the Lions traded for Greg Robinson, and the headline of your title, the Lions are giving Greg Robinson the chance to be more than a draft bust.
Yes.
So, we're going to get, I think I'm going to let Jeremy take a lot of the questions here, but just kind of where are you coming from on the rationale for, not to give up on Greg Robinson, to just, that this is a project for the Lions. This is someone who can meaningfully contribute, not just in 2017, but maybe into the future.
So the one thing I've learned about writing, and I've been doing it a little bit of time now, is that the headlines, you don't write the headlines. So people can take as the headlines sometimes aren't always accurate. This one is accurate. Mm-hmm. I think that what the Lions do as far as their offensive line philosophy really fits Greg Robinson's skill set and his body type. I wrote a lot in the article about how teams draft, and a lot of teams don't line up their front office with what their coaches want, what their scheme is. And the Lions do that. I know for a fact. I mean, basically I spent last year, because I knew it was my last year, no matter what, if I made the team or didn't make the team, so I spent last year just asking questions about how things are done, really. I talked to my offensive line coach a bunch, Ron Prince, about it. I even sat with Bob Quinn a couple times and just asked like just general questions about how roster building is done, what jobs the GM has. I didn't realize the GM, does more than football. They have to make budgets. They set up everything. They run the whole facility. So they're the CEO of the company. So just little things like that. So I learned the Lions, they pick up players with an idea of how they're going to fit into the scheme.
Well, before we get more into that, I just you mentioned that you knew last year was going to be your last year regardless. What kind of a feeling is that like to know that you're just like that you've just decided this is the end point for your career? Because a lot of guys just want to keep going until they can't go no more. Like they have to be forced out of the sport. But you clearly had kind of an end point, or at least you had come to accept kind of your end point in the career. What's that meant like in your mind?
I don't know, it wasn't too harsh for me. I think because I played on so many teams in so many years, you know, I was 2011 Panthers, 12 Vikings, 13 Chiefs, 14 Giants. And then I was at the Lions, you know, for a little bit of 16. So I was always used to the idea that my career could be over any time. I played 3 straight years on 1-year contracts. So just knowing that I knew the game could end any time. So I was always prepared for that. And then just, you know, your body just breaks down at a certain point. I've always felt that I've been really in tune with how my body feels. I think it's important for athletes to do that. And I just knew that with my ankle, it just, you know, to be honest with you, even if I had to start, and I wasn't brought in to start, I mean, playing 16 games would have been tough last year. I could have done it, but I would have had to, take off during the week. And the Lions, they understood that. You know, I got some days off in camp and whatnot for my ankle. So, but, you know, I was brought in for a certain job essentially, and the young guys played well and they let me go, and I'm okay with that.
Let's talk about some of those young guys a little bit too, since you kind of have the inside track on those. Is there anyone along the Lions offensive line that stuck out to you while you were there for 4 or 5 months?
Well, I mean, Graham Glasgow is ginormous for a center, if that's what he ends up playing. He's my height. He's 6'6", 6'5". He's a big kid. He's aggressive. He's strong. I really like Graham. I think eventually, and I wrote in my piece, I think eventually he'll end up playing center. That's why they drafted him, to play center. This is Swanson's free agent year, and Swanson played great last year. He struggled a little bit, I think, in year two, and last year he was healthy and he kind of came into his own. And he'll be a free agent, and the Lions may or may not want to pay him, knowing they have a backup on the roster and a guy who's ready to go. And then Taylor Decker, you know, I knew he came from LaCharles Bentley's program. So I knew that, you know, when you come out of LaCharles' program, you know how to work. And just for him, it was just learning on the fly how to compete in the NFL. You have to do a little bit more at times than you think you're comfortable with. And Coach Prince did a good job of getting that out of him as the season went on. Look, he played a really solid last 8 weeks of the season. You barely even noticed he was a rookie. And so I knew he had it in him. It just took a little bit of time to get out. And then Joe Dahl is really talented. It's just coming from that system in Washington State, he just has a lot to learn. Right. And so it just takes time for that process to happen. And he was, I believe, a 5th-round pick. So he has plenty of years to learn. I mean, this second year, you know, he'll dress probably every game. I know he played a little bit last year, but he'll be counted on, you know, a little more reliable backup. And then by year 3, you know, he should have a spot, hopefully, along the line or something close to that.
So I just wanted to get back to Greg Robinson then for a second, and then again, this Lions team as we get here to 2017. You mentioned Taylor Decker, and you also mentioned that second year, and that seems to be the big concern, is that he is going to be missing that second year. But just on Greg Robinson, you know, we talked a little bit about why he really fits in, how the pieces are aligned for the Detroit Lions, but why do you think then he had that kind of struggle with the St. Louis, nay, Los Angeles Rams?
Well, I wrote a piece, about a month ago now, about the transition between college offensive linemen to the NFL. And Greg was going to be one of my examples of why that's so tough. You know, if you watch his Auburn film, and he was a dominant offensive tackle. I did a podcast recently, mm-hmm. and we determined that he was the last dominant college offensive tackle. But if you watch his film at Auburn, there's almost nothing he did at Auburn that mimicked one block he's going to do in the NFL. And so he had to come into NFL and relearn how to play the offensive line position. Well, now you're in a CBA where practice time is severely limited. You don't have that time anymore. So you get rushed into games and you're not ready. He just wasn't ready. His technique suffered. And then, you know, when your technique is lacking and you're not confident in your abilities, you play slow. So that's what everyone's like, well, he doesn't know the playbook and that's why he looks slow. No, he looks slow because his technique was bad. And, you know, the Rams had a lot of deep drops and it didn't really fit his style. And what the Lions do, if you watch them, they attack on the offensive line on pass protection. They don't sit back in vertical set, as it's called. They come after guys. And I think that fits what Greg does. Short area, quickness, strong, powerful, get on guys. I think Ron Prince, he's always been a great offensive line coach. He was there in Indianapolis. I think, you know, the Lions didn't run the ball well last year, and that's it's not really a an issue of the whole unit on offense. I think it's just if you watch them play, it was one guy every play messed up. Like a different guy, you know, like one play was Taylor, one play was Graham, one play was Lincoln, one play. And that's not, that's just consistency. That comes with time. That's not the scheme. So I think that Greg will help the run game, the Lions. Eventually, like I wrote, I think he'll move down to left guard. Graham will move to center. And then you'll have Decker, Robinson, Glasgow, TJ Lang, and Wagner. And that's a really good offensive line.
You mentioned that it took a while, obviously, for Robinson to kind of get used to the NFL. Now he's kind of got a short track to get adjusted to the Lions. You know, he already missed OTAs, mini camp, 3 months away from the season. Is that going to be enough, do you think, for Robinson to acclimate to the Lions?
Probably not. It's going to take some time. But look, I think it's like any rookie sort of, you know, Taylor Decker took him, you know, what, 6-7 weeks last year to really get into it. And it's going to take that time for Greg probably. But with the way the Lions scheme things up and they make it simple for the offensive line, they'll find ways to get him help or find ways to make it work for him. But yeah, I mean, it's probably not enough time, but that's just kind of the game you're in the NFL. And like I wrote in my article, the Lions, it's a Howard Mudd system, offensive line system. So the Colts ran it forever. Ron Prince was with the Colts, and Andy Heck, who was my coach in Kansas City, offensive line coach, taught the same system. So I've been in it before multiple times, and it's not a lot. So the drills he's going to do are going to be the same over and over again. It's just a matter of whether or not he just grasps a hold of it and makes it happen on the field on Sundays.
If you were Robinson, how would you be spending this month and a half off in order to get ready in time?
Well, he works with Charles Bentley, so I'm not worried that he won't be ready. He'll be ready to play. You know, his shape, his conditioning will be ready. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So I'm not worried about him not being physically ready for camp. You know, technique-wise, you know, nothing, you know, Charles will work on things with him, but, you know, they're not going to be the same things he'll do in Detroit. And, yeah, a lot of his technique work will have to happen when he gets back to training camp.
Now, as soon as Robinson left L.A., we saw reporters, NFLB guys, kind of, like, immediately putting out that they had, it feels like a lot of them had just gotten fed this, that there had just been suddenly all these, you know, questions and issues raised about Greg's work ethic. And they just all of a sudden just seemed to just crawl out of the woodwork.
One reporter, by the way, who said that.
Was it one?
I think it was just Jason Cole.
Okay. Yeah. Cole. Yeah, you're right. I was trying to find the tweet here. But, like, everyone kind of picked that up and ran with it. What do you really make about that? Like, because that just seems like something some teams tend to do when they let one of their guys go to the street. They just feed, and it's like, yeah, this guy wasn't that good of a worker.
Well, I think the quote, well, the tweet was something about how he liked rap lyrics more than playbook.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that wasn't coded at all.
Whatever. I honestly don't put much stock into that. I mean, how he was as a Ram might be different as how he is as a Lion. We don't know the full extent of how much he did or did not know. It sounds like the Rams are bitter on the way out. Obviously, it's a high draft pick that they had to trade away, you know, second pick overall. You don't want to admit defeat in that. So, but his work ethic, though, I mean, that's something that you need to vet in college. If that was an issue in college, and that's on the Rams for end up taking him.
So I guess I have one last question about Robinson in particular, and that's just, where do you think this guy's ceiling is with the Lions?
That's a good question. I mean, I think if you can get him to be average to above average, you're fine. I mean, you can get by with him on that offensive line. He's not, I don't know, will he be an all-pro? It's too late for that, probably. Will he make a Pro Bowl? I mean, he's got enough talent for that. I just don't, you know, that's a long way away for him, but I think him being serviceable in the line system is what you want. It's what you need. It's what you traded for. And just someone to get you to Taylor Decker. You know, Decker, you know, he'll be lucky if he plays. I mean, he may or may not play this year. But, you know, you just need someone that won't get Stafford killed. And if Greg can just do that, you know, that's all they want from him this year. And then next year, hopefully, they can get more out of him.
All right, we got a couple minutes here, so we're going to do this with Jeff real quick. Jeff, we've been doing these things. They're called ListCasts. They are proprietary to us. Please do not steal. you know, from your playing time and now, you know, in your career now, writing about the NFL, we were looking to see who you think are probably going to be, like, I would say the top five guards going into the 2017 NFL season.
Oh, going guards. Okay, because I made a whole list of, of everybody.
What? Oh, just linemen?
Well, I can. I mean, we can do. I can do both. I can knock them off real quick. Okay, so
yeah, sure. Let's do linemen. Let's do that.
Top five linemen. I mean, number one is Tyron Smith of the Cowboys. Okay. He is built like a lineman that you would draw up. A perfect specimen of alignment. And he's remarkable. Left tackle for the Cowboys. And then, you know, this list is kind of not in order after Tyron Smith. He's one. The top two guards to me are Marshall Yanda of the Ravens, and he can move everywhere. He played left guard last year, which he had never really done before. He plays right tackle. Zach Martin of the Cowboys, right guard. They're going to have to pay him so much money, it's ridiculous. He's a monster. And then I finished with two tackles. Trent Williams on the Redskins. Love watching him play. Physical, athletic, violent. And then Joe Thomas. I mean, you have a guy who hasn't missed a snap in his entire career. He's the only lineman right now at tackle who you can say is a guaranteed Hall of Famer. I think a guard, you know, Yanda is probably up there, is getting close to a Hall of Famer. But guards, it's tough to get in for guards. As far as if you want to round out the rest of the guards, Kalichi Olesime, KO, on the Raiders has got to be up there at number three. I did a list of top five guards. TJ Lang, I believe, was up there for me on my list as far as top five guards. I thought he played really well last season. I'm going to pull it up here just to refresh myself here. Mm-hmm.
No love for your brother yet?
Well, I mean, I love my brother. I mean, it's right tackle is very important. He is the best right tackle. Let's not get that twisted. This Jack Conklin stuff needs to stop a little bit. Let's see. I listed my guards as. Let's see what I did here. DeCastro is probably up there, and then TJ Lang. So it was Zach Martin, Yanda, KO, DeCastro, Lang are my top five. And then there's I think Trey Turner's really good. Kyle Long. I mean, there's a lot of good young guards right now.
Great. Jeremy, do you have anything else?
No, I think I wanted to just kind of end this with giving you a chance to promote some of your stuff. I know you do a ton of stuff. You got a book out there, your podcast, YouTube, blogging, you do it all. So the floor is yours to promote your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you just go to my Twitter, at Jeff Schwartz, Jeff with a G, GEOFFSCHWARTZ, I mean, you got everything I do is on there. I write for SB Nation. I'm hoping to do a little bit more with video. I have my own little web series I do called Scheming with Schwartz, where I talk about offensive line plays. I draw things up on a board. You can see this is actually not video, but behind me is my board where I do a lot of the work. I have my book, Eat My Schwartz. I do Sirius XM NFL Radio. I do TV and radio in Charlotte. I just do a lot. I keep myself busy.
Do you still do your podcast?
Yes, Block Them Up. It's you know, Duke and I, I've gotten busy, so it's not as easy as it used to be. But we did a last episode with Cole Kublik, who's a radio guy in Alabama. We talked, SEC football guy. We talked a ton about the last great offensive lineman. We talked about it was really fun to talk to him about SEC hatred, like what the hate is like. He had a line saying that it's people love to hate more than they love to love their own team. If that makes sense.
You're speaking my language. No. Yeah. I spent 5 years in Georgia. You're speaking my language now.
So it was a really fun podcast. I'm hoping to have Kyle Turley on soon, and we'll just continue down the road of, it's offensive line heavy at times. We have some fun episodes in the past with Josh Wolf, a comedian. It's a little different than we normally done with Amy Trask. So we've had some really fun episodes. We have one with TJ Lang. Back when he was a Packer, hopefully that's not offending a lot of people, but you go listen to that as well.
All right, sounds good. Jeff, thank you so much, and I swear it will never be G off again.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along. We got a little surprise for you. We're going to do another list cast here very soon. It's a fun list cast. It's not going to be a positional one. But before we get there, real quick, news did come in on Tuesday. Kyrie Thornton has been suspended for 6 games for violating the NFL substance abuse policy. Jeremy, anything else to add to this?
It's just kind of a bummer because this is a guy I think maybe fans were underrating a little bit. The Lions clearly were investing in him. He signed a 2-year deal this offseason, so, you know, this was a guy that was obviously part of the team's plans. That being said, they do have a couple of contingency plans in place. You know, they signed Akeem Spence this offseason. They just signed that Ego Ferguson guy, the guy who used to be a Packer. They won't be hurt too bad by this, but it's obviously never any good news when a player gets suspended. And this is the first time in a while, I think, under Jim Caldwell, a player was suspended while with the Lions. We had the Armand T. Bryant thing last year, but that was for something he had done before he'd been with the Lions. So this is kind of the first black eye, I would say, in Jim Caldwell's tenure in a while. So, you know, it's not devastating, but it's not something you like to see.
Anything else, Ryan? No? We good?
No, I think we're good, and I think you covered just about everything. They also signed Jordan Hill, too.
Right.
Yeah, the former defensive tackle from Seattle. So there's a ton of depth there, and I think that... Did we really think that Kyrie Thornton's position was necessarily secure? Did we think that he was like a shoe-in to be one of those rotational guys, or no?
I mean, I had him in... I ironically made a 53-man prediction today, and I think now it's pretty clear that even if Kyrie does make the team, he's probably going to go immediately on the suspended list, which means basically someone else is going to take his 53 once that happens. I thought he was in. I wouldn't have ever said it was a lock, but I think he was solidly in with chance of being on the bubble, depending on how training camp goes.
I think that's it. I'm Kyrie Thornton.
All right, well, why don't we do real quick one more thing before we jump into this? Let's do real quick. Let me drop this music here.
Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you say him? Where's Wally?
Ryan, I have demanded this Wally's World out of you. I will have it by hook or by crook, so please, if we do not get this, we're not doing the list cast, so please explain. Father's Day was Sunday, and it would be remiss if we did not have this POD cast without a Wally's World.
All right, suit yourself. So, on Father's Day, I wanted to take my dad to a place where he would really get a meal that he could enjoy, and Wally enjoys his steaks more than just about any other warm-blooded American father does, so I took him to Outback Steakhouse.
First point right there.
Okay, there's first point. Second point is, we're sitting there, and I was with my girlfriend, and my mom was also there, so they were wrapped up in a discussion while my father and I talked about anything from, like, Aaron Judge to the first McDonald's in Pontiac that had golden arches. And when my dad was wondering how much the Golden Arches sold for, he threw out a number, and my mom all of a sudden jumped in on our conversation and said, oh no, it was way less than that. And then my dad got very adamant that it was $500,000. And then my mom responded with, who in their right mind would pay $500,000 for Golden Arches? My dad said, somebody who collects McDonald's stuff. I'm not sure where you would like store these giant Golden Arches that used to be a part of these buildings, like infrastructure, but, apparently, somebody does, according to Wally. We also talked about when he sat third row at the Pontiac Silverdome for Led Zeppelin in 1977.
That's all I wanted. I wanted him getting really mad about the Golden Arches. Like, how mad did he really get on these?
He didn't get super upset. Like, he was definitely sure that they sold for more than $50,000, which
so,
I'm not sure... I don't know if there's a way that you can actually look this up, and this just might be like one of those things where it's like you are very adamant that you remember something being a certain way, but he quickly came back around to remembering happy times, and that was like watching Jimmy Page play guitar for, you know, 3 hours straight without an opening band in 77 at the Silverdome. So Father's Day was good for him when he was eating his ribeye. He may have had New York strip. I don't know. Whatever you order at the Outback Steakhouse. He did order it medium rare.
Attaboy. Okay. Attaboy. Good.
That's all I care about. All right. Let's get on to this list cast.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. All
right, let's start our list, Cap. All right, that's the list cast music. What are we list casting here? So this started because we noticed something around Jeremy's apartment. We noticed that Jeremy has a lot of, for some, when I say a lot of, I mean one, but he might have extra stuff there. What do you have there? It's an as seen on TV thing.
Yes, the first thing that happened was we were just talking and my light randomly turned on, which happens every now and then because I have the clapper, which is one of my favorite apartment things that I have. And then I let you guys in on a little secret that instead of like having an extensive Amazon wish list for my parents or whoever wants to buy me a gift, it just says as seen on TV items because I love as seen on TV items. And I have a handful of items, ones that I have used, ones that I have not. So you guys seem to be enthusiastic about that, so we are going to do a top five list of as seen on TV items. And I'm not sure if this is going to be like a wish list for you guys or things that you've actually experienced, but I'm eager to hear this list for everybody.
These are mostly for me stuff that I've experienced because I had to look up a few things just to kind of round this out, but I absolutely have like my top three all ready to go, and I took some time, actually, you know what, top four, I forgot I had seen one of these on TV and I was just blown away by one of them. So let's start. Who wants to start with their five and four?
I'll start with my number five. Let's and go. Four, why not? Okay, so number five on the list is the Ove Glove for me, because who doesn't love an oven mitt that allows you the free range of motion to use all five of your fingers? I think that's such a detriment to be only to use it as a mitten. Like, why does it have to be a mitten? You should be able to use all five of your digits.
I can only imagine the infomercial that has like the black and white like person struggling to grab things with only.
Those are the best things about as seen on TV commercials, though, is because everybody's life is completely, like, a mess.
Yeah. just simple things are apparently impossible. Chores like holding a remote and a and a bowl of popcorn is somehow impossible. Washing a car is a Sisyphean task. It's amazing. And that's what we love about this stuff.
Number four for me is the Wonder Hanger. I'm not sure if you've ever seen this before.
Oh, I know that. Yeah.
I'm looking it up right now.
The Wonder Hanger is completely impressive. So it's essentially just something that saves you space in your closet because it turns this like horizontal space into a vertical space. And I don't know. It's a difficult way to describe it without just looking at the two pictures that perfectly describe it. But it only costs $10.
And it's definitely
my
thing. Yeah.
My top five, just because I'm a man who has a closet full of clothes. I hate folding shirts. Like, I will hang every shirt just because A, I hate it to be wrinkled, and B, because it takes more time than to put it on a hanger and hang it up. So, five and four, the Ove Glove and the Wonder Hanger.
Speaking of which, I have laundry sitting here for 2 days because, like you, I hate folding laundry, but I'll eventually do it. But, you mind if I go? Or do you want
go
Jeremy?
For it.
Jeremy?
No, okay. You got this.
So my top five is basically like the weirdest shit you will see on TV. And a lot of this has to do with the delivery. A lot of it really has to do with how it is delivered on TV. So at number five, and this is a really tough list on by that thing. At number five is the backup bedside holster, which was a way for you to apparently store a pump action shotgun in a hidden compartment near your bedside. And I will always remember the commercial as the guy acts like he's being held up. He puts his hands up and leans back in bed, and the shotgun snaps out, and he immediately jumps up and points it at the camera. And I'm just thinking, A, who would ever like hold you up while you're in your bed? B, could like just imagining that thing just jump out accidentally. So,
Chris, I've never seen this before in my entire life.
I haven't either, but I'm excited to Google this now.
This might have been something to do with Georgia. I don't know.
Been a Georgia as seen on TV product.
Yeah, probably. Number four, and once again, a lot it has to do with the delivery. Like, we all love the delivery guy. Billy Mays, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, it's a pretty simple product, but Flex Seal comes in at number four because the guy who uses it is so enthusiastic, and he goes to such great lengths to prove how this basically, this spray rubber is so powerful. He, like, cuts things in half, uses them as boats, uses screen doors as boats. Like, this guy can make, is basically his next appearance with Flex Seal. He's going to try to make the actual Polish submarine work.
He used that Flex Seal, I think you're right, as, like, the screen door for, like, an airboat. Yes. He, like, takes out on, like, the Everglades.
Yes, and then he, like, cuts a boat in half and then, like, seals it back together. And it's like, yeah, no shit, it's rubber. Of course it's going to work like that, my guy.
My God.
But he goes to such great lengths to convince you that this is what you need. So that's what he's probably one of the best. Well, okay, I've got another guy up here that's even higher, but I think he's in prison right now. So this is the guy. This is the highest.
I already know who you're talking about.
Yes. So this is the highest active sales guy here, the guy for Flex Seal. Jeremy, why don't you give your 5 and 4?
All right, I'm going to actually start with two products that I've tested out that are dog shit and you should never buy. Quickly, one is called the Slushy Magic, which is basically like a plastic cup and these two ice cubes in a plastic thing so that you can reuse them. Basically, the idea is you put like a flavored drink in here. You put these covered ice cubes in there and then you shake it and it turns into a slushy. It kind of works, but it's still dog shit. Like, it's worthless. Like, I don't know why you would want to make a crappy slushy. Slushies are crappy in general. So don't get that. And then also don't get the Chop Wizard, which is just this, like, thing where you're supposed to put, like, a half an onion on this thing and then, like, push it down and it chops it into perfect cubes. Broke it on the second day. Don't get it.
Jesus.
All right. My number five of real ones, it's ones that I have that I have not tried yet. It's called the Perfect Brownie. It's this little container where it, like, separates the brownie batter into squares already, so you don't have to cut it. And I guess the idea is that you get a corner piece with every piece. I haven't tried it yet, but it's intriguing. I like the thought process behind it. So, Perfect Brownie. And then, I'll be honest. Actually, no, I'll say my number four is, instead of the Chop Wizard, get the Slap Chop, which is just this thing where you, like, slap on it a couple times at the top, and it takes, like, the skin off of garlic, and it chops things in perfect. It doesn't seem like you could break it like you broke the thing, like I broke the other thing, so I want a Slap Chop. Give me a Slap Chop.
So you're willing to put your faith into something else to chop onions and vegetables?
Yes, I need something to help me chop, and it's not the little accordion push down piece of crap plastic. Give me a Slap Chop.
Jeremy, right. have you realized that you're the target audience for these infomercials?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I'm willing to pay $5.95 shipping and handling for anything.
You want Jeremy to go 3 and 2?
Well, that's always the rotating order. Yep. So you get 3 and 2 as well.
My number three, it could be my number one if it actually works, because it's an amazing idea that I think everybody would want if it works. Chances are that it doesn't work, which is why I'm guessing you guys have never heard of it. It's called the Chillo, and it's some little insert that you put in your pillow casing that is supposed to keep it chill on both sides.
God.
And I'm sure it doesn't work, or I'm sure it'll give you, like, some sort of brain tumor. But I want the hell out of a Chillo. Give me a Chillo. If not just for the name.
# Cali boy problems.
Pretty much.
It's 100 degrees here. Give me a break. And my number two is a Magic Bullet, which is essentially just a small portable blender that it actually kind of works pretty well. Nothing really funny about that one, but I can vouch for the Magic Bullet.
All right, my 3 and 2. Well, you already mentioned one product that was sold by this guy. That is the very famous Vince Offer Shlomi. Vince Shlomi. I'm really not sure what his original name is, but he did a lot of great things like Slap Chop and the ShamWow. But my favorite from him is the Shticky.
And this is basically the guy with the spiked hair and like the cordless mic that goes around his face, right?
Yeah, he has like the head ear thing, like the microphone on the ear. Yeah. He was arrested on like a felony batter. He beat the hell out of like some sex worker in Miami.
Yep.
So like, yeah, this guy's a scumbag. But
I don't. What does the Shticky do? I don't remember.
It's like a lint roller, except you use it on like everything.
On the.
I mostly remember because I was up and I remember seeing this one thing of these two Canadian guys on TSN, which is ESPN for Canadians, and their Sports Center, which is basically about the same except it's an RE at the end because this is Canada, had two guys on their late night, Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole, and they were basically like the Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann of old time Sports Center. And one time they signed off by displaying how the Shticky works by just randomly having coins and paper clips on this guy's shoulder and using it on air. So the Shticky is my number three.
Dan and I got Shtickies today. We mentioned Shtickies on the radio a couple of months ago, and they sent some to us. Oh, but coincidentally, Dan, you have some coins and paper clips on your shoulder. Let's see if the Shticky can take care of that. Wow, look at that. The Shticky took care of it. Look at that. Isn't that fantastic? It really works. The Shticky works. My whole life is going to change.
Sports Center. Coming up.
Shticky.
Number two. Just for the insane images it produced, I don't know how to say this, so fuck off. The Navage, the Navage, nasal care.
Oh no, neti pot.
What?
Like the neti pot?
Is that what it's? Either way, it's an image of it's like a pitcher of water that you put in your nose and it comes out the other ear or something, like out your ear or out your other nostril or something. I don't know. It's horrifying to look at. And I just remember seeing it's the very famous GIF, the woman putting that thing to her nose and it just coming out the other way. And it's like, why are you doing this?
That's terrible.
Yeah, the neti pot became a thing. I'm not sure why, but yeah, it goes in one nostril. You just kind of lean your head onto the side, and it comes out the other nostril. It's supposed to clear your nasal passage.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry, it is the neti pot. I was thinking, I was looking at one of the other ones that's like Navage, which is like one off it, but I was thinking of the neti pot. Yeah, and that's just, yeah, that thing's just for, you know the one. It's the vacant looking woman with like the short hair, and she just suddenly turns to the camera, puts it up one nose, and it comes out one nostril, it comes out the other.
Yikes.
I don't like a reminder that my body works that way.
Yeah. Ryan, what's your, I've heard you can like seriously injure yourself doing that kind of thing too. Like you can get water up in your brain or something because it's going through your entire nasal cavity.
That trust does not that sound shit. Real.
My number three is an original, and I'm sure it had to have been on television in the 90s, but I wasn't even a thought in Wally's brain yet. But The Club.
Oh, nice.
The only thing that I can use to describe The Club is this Amazon review that is a verified purchase from user BAVB on July 19th, 2015. He said, "Thieves should burn in hell. Get a real job." That's the name of the review. He said, "I will use this club. I will use this to club the next person who tries to steal my car. We just had a Honda Civic stolen. I hope this device helps slow down / deter the next amateur until I can come out and tase them repeatedly as I await the arrival of the cops." 13 people found this review helpful on Amazon. The club is my number three item. The number two item, and it's There's going to be a reason why it's not number one on my list, but number two is the Clapper because it's so classic. It's the epitome of everything you want out of a as seen on TV commercial item. It helps you, it enables you to be the laziest, most scummiest person that you can be.
How dare you?
Give you number one then.
I own a Clapper, so I can say this about myself as well.
Attaboy, attaboy.
God damn.
My number one, and this one's for you, Chris Lemieux. The Fasta Pasta.
Oh my god.
It allows you to cook your pasta in the microwave.
Oh no!
Why?
No.
Why? I need to stop this podcast right now.
The Fasta Pasta allows you to cook your pasta in a much superior way to using a traditional method of the stovetop. This user says, I always know exactly how much time to microwave it for, and it comes out the same way every time. Plus, the lid is a strainer.
I can't do this anymore. I need to stop this podcast right now. I am so mad in America.
The Fasta Pasta.
Does it come with like a 20% off Ragu too? Because that would be perfect.
No, if you buy two, you get a Sam's Club like portion of like Ragu. But it's only if you order in the next 30 minutes.
Chris, can you muster up enough to
yes,
number one?
Yes, I am about to, because this one was the thing of nightmares. I think I saw this once when I was like a small little kid and someone reminded me of it the other day. This is from, actually, I wasn't that small. It was in 1999 and Linda Evans was in this commercial. It's called the Rejuvenique. It was an electric face. Go Google that right now. Go Google it. Look it up right now. It was an electric face mask. It was a face toning mask kit, electric, but it was horrifying to behold. Every image of this thing on someone's face. Yeah. It's like that fucking mask from like the original Tim Burton Batman that one girl wears.
It looks like Asuka's mask he wears to the ring.
You got the wrestling in, yeah.
This is terrifying.
It's horrifying.
Even the inside of it is terrifying too.
Yeah, it's got like those little like, yeah,
electric nodes. This is terrible.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like the commercial was basically a nice looking woman puts this thing on and just sits there perfectly still with this thing on her face, and all you can see out of it is her eyes. And I swear this is not a BDSM device. This is an actual thing people sold for beauty.
My God, that is
horrifying.
It's almost a Jason mask, but it's somehow scarier.
Yeah, for best results, use Rejuvenique 15 minutes a day, 3 to 4 times a week. So nearly a half of the week was spent 15 minutes each day putting this horrible thing on. And I don't know, envisioning the empty eternal void or something.
All right, Jeremy, well, I went the opposite direction. I went with something that's actually potentially, this is one, again, I don't have personal experience with, but it seems legit, and I love my rotating meats. So give me Ron Popeil's Set It and Forget It oven for rotisserie chicken and other rotisserie meats. Because that thing looks amazing. You can just see the juices dripping off, guys. And it's like self-marinates. Man, I'm certain that would be the greatest purchase I ever made if I ever made it.
Roast a 10-pound turkey in 2 hours.
That seems like something I would not... Yeah, that's not something I would recommend.
That product was like one of those infomercials that's like 2 hours long and is in front of a studio audience. So like,
how much? I just want to ask, and when it's in front of a studio audience like that, when it's a paid commercial, how much Valium did they think they gave everyone? Like
they're pumping something through the ducts.
Yeah, yeah, they're pumping like I can't even think of a great
You know what they probably did? They probably gave them all a chillo the night before and they had a great night's sleep.
Jesus Christ. Let's get to the mailbag. Feels like we're already in it.
Fasta pasta.
I hate you.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail.
Mail time. Hashtag AskPOD on Twitter. I think we're going to, I don't know. Do you think we should move exclusively? We're still getting a lot of people from the AskPOD threads, though. So I think we're going to keep doing that. We've been talking about maybe going to just exclusively Twitter, but I don't think we're there yet. So, before we do, as always, Jeremy reads the reviews. You can send in the reviews on iTunes, and send them in early and often, because the more we get, the more it prevents Jeremy from letting us talk about wrestling.
Perfect. But this week's reviews, mixed messages regarding that. I did want to read one that started out, make the bad man stop, but that one seems to have disappeared for whatever reason, so if you wrote one, write it again.
Or, like, send us an email or something. Just, we need to find out how to get it to, again, because it was good.
But, we'll start with this one from, Kawamatos. Gave us 5 stars. His review reads, "Of all the podcasts I listen to, this certainly takes around an hour of my time. I tried to muster more emotion, but I'm a lifelong Lions fan, and they've taken all of my feels. 5 stars, but please continue with the wrestling segment."
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I'm sad we missed the make the bad man stop one, because there's a theme to these ones, because the one that disappeared was basically blaming you, Jeremy. Blaming you for causing this problem, not blaming us, which you seem intent on doing. Read your second review.
Second one is from Weston Nielsen, also 5 stars. He says, here to prevent further wrestling babble. He says, "I'm mainly here to prevent 40 seconds of wrestling talk, but also have long appreciated the podcast. Their car knowledge is in the upper echelon, beat only by their admiration of their far more than adequate host."
Okay.
Chris does not deal well with compliments.
No, I just... What else am I going to say at this point? Okay, question from No Ordinary Bauble. Where do Detroit Don and Superfan tailgate? Would love to party with those guys before a game, quote, and after. I mean, parentheses, and after, probably.
That's provided that the Lions game ends up in a victory, yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we should probably give some background. Detroit Don and what was the guy's other name? Superfan, just Superfan. They're basically like the older bearded guys who wear like the pads and the outside of the jersey, and like the stuffed lions is like lion pelts.
Yeah, they look like the Road Warriors.
Road Warriors, except far more chunky.
I don't know.
Would you want to? I've said before that I sat behind Ron Crackiola, Crackman, and I would not want to tailgate with him. But, I don't know, I shouldn't say that. He might be nice. So, I don't know, would you tailgate with a superfan?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know the guys. Sure. I'm not all that into the tailgating that much experience in general. I just like...
I mean, I love tailgating, but it's just hard to do in Detroit. It's not a lot of spot to do it.
Tailgating is also just difficult because it kind of just sets up the rest of your Sunday for a definite nap. Because you have to get down there early enough to, like, actually enjoy yourself. And depending on what the weather's like, then, I mean, it's just a struggle to stay warm.
Yeah, and it's even worse because, like, it's the 1 p.m. kickoffs. Like, I can understand if you were, like, doing a college game and the college, you know, most college kickoffs, unless you get the shit of a noon kickoff. But traditionally, it's, like, what, 3 o'clock on a Saturday? So you're able to get there a little late, sleep in a little bit before doing your tailgate. 1 o'clock kickoff is kind of a little brutal.
Yeah, for sure.
Ken Mitchell asks us, what are your early predictions for the six NFC playoffs teams?
Let me...
Are you just giving the division to the Packers again?
I'm not willing to give it to them. I'll give it to Martellus Bennett, but I'll never give the division to the Packers ever in my entire life.
Who do you see? This is this tricky one, because I think some people are expecting the Cowboys just repeat in the NFC East, but that's one of those divisions that always seems to have a different team in a year to year.
I wouldn't be shocked to see the Giants win that division.
Really? I was going to say that about the Skins.
I'm never going to put my faith in Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. See, but this is what we're talking. Or, I mean, maybe if the Eagles actually don't crap the bed in the second half of the season.
Yeah, if you want my six playoff teams, I'll go Giants, NFC East winners. I'll go Cardinals as my NFC West winners. I will go Packers as my NFC North winners. And I will go Tampa Bay Buccaneers as my NFC South winners.
You got your wildcard teams?
My two wildcard teams are the Falcons and the Lions.
I'm going to go, let's see here. I'm going to go Eagles.
NFC East winners?
Yeah. Enough chaos there. I got some belief in Carson Wentz.
So,
I'll go there.
So much for my hot takes. Let's just let Chris blow off the doors.
Shout out Bleeding Green. Let's go Packers in the North. In the South, South's tricky too. Let me go Falcons again, though. I know it's a little safe, but I'll go Falcons. And then out West, I'm going to take the Hawks. Seahawks.
Seahawks?
And for wild cards, let's go with Carolina. And this is basically a backdoor, do you think the Lions make the playoff question? And I'm going to go Cardinals as my second wild card.
You have a big affinity for birds. I think you picked just about every bird team in the NFC.
They're all good right now. All right, what do you got, Jeremy?
It's hard because my temptation is just to pick all the division winners from last year. Like, I'm definitely taking the Cowboys. I know, like you said, the East kind of jumps around every year, but still like the Cowboys. I'm taking the Seahawks. I'm taking the Packers. You know, I think I'll take the Bucks too, though, out of the South. And then give me the Falcons.
A lot of love for the Bucks, but I got to say, like, I even said this, they might be like a trap game on another podcast I went on, but, like, I don't know, their defense really doesn't inspire me, though.
They got Gerald McCoy. That's all you need.
Yes, yeah.
The thing about the Bucks, too, real quick, Jeremy, is the reason I'm big on them is their offense looks like it could just keep up with any other team in that division.
Yeah.
As long as Winston stays on, like, his progress, like, they added DeSean Jackson, they added O.J. Howard, like, and Mike Evans, I mean, those three guys could just blow the doors off.
It's true. For my two wild card, give me the Falcons and the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals are due to bounce back in a big way.
Drew Stanton at the helm?
No.
Carson Palmer.
Theoretically asks us, this question is for when Alex Reno is back on. Spoiler alerts, Theo, he's never coming back on. But if Alex is listening to this, the question is, did you have a good Thanksgiving 2017? Did Alex have his Thanksgiving early or something?
I don't know what that's in reference
to. Why did I read this? Why did I not screen this question?
Because it had to deal with Alex Reno and you wanted to slam him on the podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, let's go to Twitter here. D-Walk asks us, if everyone on the podcast was a college football team, who would be the first to become bowl eligible?
Well, with this college football we're talking, everyone is bowl eligible.
Okay, let's limit it to, like, the good bowls. Like, let's make the Sun Bowl basically the cutoff.
I don't understand this question.
I don't understand the question.
All right, let me give my answers then. I think Ryan would be the first to become bowl eligible.
Thank you.
Yeah. I would. I'm trying to figure this out for myself. I had a great answer yesterday. I think I would become bowl eligible, like, down the line, but it would only be for, like, you'd have to make us go to, like, a good place. Like, you can't send us to, like, you can't send us to Idaho. You can't send us to Boston. You can't send us to Detroit. You got to send us to, like, I'll take Tampa. And Jeremy, I don't know where he'd be below. I don't know where he'd be going on a bowl trip. I don't know where to put him. Probably like Shreveport.
I want the Beef O'Brady Bowl, wherever that's being played. Give me that one.
I don't even think that's a bowl anymore. I think they changed sponsors.
Well, then I don't want to go to a bowl.
Is the New Era Bowl still a thing?
The Pinstripe New Era. That's in Yankee Stadium, yep.
Right, I think that should be your bowl, Chris.
Me?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you wear hats.
Oh, yeah, that's
the only
right.
explanation
I
have for that.
All right, Martin wants to ask, can you do an all-time or top five most hyped players who went on to do nothing for the team?
I did something like this a couple years back. I did an all-hype off-season team. Let's see if I can pull it up really quick. But like,
I'm just adding this to our growing list of like potential list casts, pretty much.
Like number one with a bullet has to be Mike Williams.
You think so? With a bullet.
Yeah.
Hard though, because like he's a first round draft pick. He's supposed to be hyped.
Right, but he had a ton of hype and did nothing. Is that the essence of the question?
Pretty much.
I think it was more like a hype train type of thing. Whereas what's Ballard? What's his first name? Something Ballard? Denario Ballard? Demario Ballard. So yeah, I have a list of offensive defense. Demario Ballard, Patrick Edwards, Kellen Moore, Marcus Pollard, Jason Fox.
Jesus.
I remember Marcus Pollard.
Did we trade for him, or was it just like, oh, he's coming off of Manning's team, he's going to be great?
Luca Jason. Wow, I almost changed that name, too. Which of the Cars movies is y'all's favorite? Cars, Cars 2, or Cars 3?
I have never seen any of the Cars films just because they don't talk enough about the like nuts and bolts of like what goes into a car. Like they don't talk enough horsepower. They don't talk torque, and they definitely don't talk enough about cylinders.
I have a thing like, do you spend all day talking about what's inside your body? Do you talk about your liver and your intestines? And
I did this weekend at Founders Fest. Talked about my liver a lot.
I think this is an excellent question, because as the listeners know, I love to talk about Cars. And so I view the Cars trilogy as like the Godfather trilogy. Like, that's how good that series is.
Wait, so, are you saying I should not see Cars 3 then?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Because there is minimal horsepower talk. But the other two, I'm all in.
You're all in?
Mullen. Anything with Larry the Cable Guy, really. I'm just a huge, huge fan.
Jesus Christ.
You're unbelievable.
I can't believe that came out of your mouth. Even while we're joking, that you said that. Josh LaFond asks us, and by the way, Josh, congratulations, he is now, if you want to follow him on Twitter, at Josh L.A. Fond, F-O-N-D, he is now writing over at Mason Brew, the Michigan SB Nation site. So hyper congrats to him. Even though only one person in here actually likes your stupid team. But what's the one thing from your childhood you wish you still had today?
My innocence.
Jesus. I didn't expect this to get dark.
The one thing from my childhood that I wish I still had today. I don't want it to be like a very petty, frivolous thing. Or like of course you do, Chris.
I want that that Ghostbusters toy where you stepped on it and it like opened up the flaps to catch your ghosts.
Is that all it did was open up flaps?
Yep. Yeah, you remember that from the movie? Yep, that's what it did.
I don't remember the toy.
It was like an air pump thing where you just press it and like the air would flow through there and open up the flaps. And that's totally all it did. I mean, you guys wouldn't appreciate it, Ryan, because you only had the all girls Ghostbuster. Ew, I can't believe they did that. Oh no.
I don't even know what Ghostbusters is. When did that come out? Who's in Ghostbusters?
The Paleolithic era. You know what? I'm going to answer this in two ways. So one is because I want to think of something that was useful today. So when I was a kid, over in West Pennsylvania, where my grandfather lived, they had a bunch of interesting stuff from the extended family in one of their garages. And there was a go-kart in there, which our cousin Jason would always get out and, like, we'd always tool around in that. But I remember one time they had an old moped in there. Like, we're talking 60s, 70s style moped, the kind that, like, it looked like the kind of thing that, like, Marlon Brando would tool around in, what was the name of the movie he was in? It wasn't Rebel Without a Cause. What was the other one?
Streetcar Named Desire?
No, this was before that, where he was like a punk, kind of looking guy. The Wild Ones. It was The Wild Ones. It looks like something like out of that movie. And I once rode on it with my uncle, and I fell off, and I like nearly, and I tore up like all the flesh on one of my legs. And I don't know what happened to it. My grandfather has since died, and my grandmother is in a nursing home, and they've moved at least once. I don't know where it is anymore or if it still exists, but that's something I wish I still had because I'd actually make it useful today. The other thing that I would think about is probably like my old Sega Genesis. No, actually my original PlayStation, so I could still keep playing Metal Gear Solid.
That's a fair enough answer. For me, I think I've finally reached an answer. I would want Frasier's back on Thursday nights at 9.
I'm about to toss some salad and scrambled eggs. God damn it! Cut it out!
Yes! No,
goodbye, everyone. We'll see you next time. What the fuck just happened?
I murdered a quote from the theme song. It made it sound like I wanted to toss Ryan's salad.
This will be the most infamous drop in Pride of Detroit history. I just watched the Rejuvenique commercial lined up with Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams Are Made of These, and it's the most terrifying thing that I've ever done in my entire life.
Well, how does this mask do that?
Well, if you can get the idea of what doing 8 sit-ups a second would do for your stomach, you have an idea of what Rejuvenique would do for your face. Because in essence, Rejuvenique does for the face what exercise does for the body. And the way it does that is there's a control unit that during a facial session actually sends an impulse up to the zones in the mask and actually activates the face and skin to exercise, tighten, and tone. So you like to say that's a lot of face ups because you're doing it 8 times a second.
During a facial toning session, the system delivers a mild impulse generated by a tiny 9-volt battery from the control unit. These impulses are directed to the specially designed gold-plated facial cushions of the patented facial mask and actually activate the face and skin to exercise, tighten, and tone through each of the 12 facial zones. These impulses start in the forehead facial zone, and about every 20 seconds automatically move one zone at a time through each of the 12 facial zones. These zones are specifically designed to handle the major problem areas of the face. The system automatically repeats this process a total of 4 times during your 15-minute facial workout. The result is not only a more toned, youthful-looking face, but also a face that looks and feels fresher, more vibrant, with that healthy, rosy glow.